I think it's a good stepping stone. It's a good point. It's a good opening door for other countries to follow.
Taiwan leads Asia in same-sex marriage. It's Friday, May 26th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online right now on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, China's credit rating takes a hit. South Korea's former president on trial. A social media crackdown in Pakistan. Time travel and movie blockbusters, all on today's VOA Asia. June is Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month to commemorate the Stonewall Riots, which occurred at the end of June 1969. And as a result, many Pride events are held during this month to recognize the impact LGBT people have had in the world. Same-sex marriage has long been one of the prominent LGBT issues, and this week a top court ruling paved the way for Taiwan to become the first in Asia to allow same-sex marriage. Evie Jiang is a Taiwanese-American attorney specializing in international family law. She spoke from Los Angeles with VOA Asia's David Byrd about the issue.
It's a great, great step forward. It's going to allow more countries in Asia to be more liberal and then to start open their law for same-sex marriage. I'm a little bit biased, but I'm so proud because I'm from Taiwan, and it's so nice to know that Taiwan is the first country in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage. And that would help even surrogacy law a lot of benefit, because a lot of time when couples come in here to do surrogacy, if they're like gay couple, it's hard for them to bring the child back because Taiwan didn't marriage. So on the birth certificate, we're always having a problem who we put as the mother. But now since Taiwan do allow same-sex marriage, clients that are coming here for surrogacy can easily take the child home once the surrogacy is done. So I know we talk about same-sex marriage in Taiwan, but how does same-sex marriage law have passed also affecting the other type of law, which is surrogacy? So, which a lot of my clients are from Asia, because surrogacy is illegal in Taiwan. And then, so when they come over here, it was really hard for me to prepare their birth certificate to having same-sex gender as mom and dad. So now I don't have to worry about that anymore, so which is fantastic.
Now, this requires, the court said basically that barring same-sex couples from marrying violated the Constitution, but same-sex marriage has been illegal in Taiwan up until now, right?
Yes, that is true. And they think that by disallowed or by banning same-sex marriage, it's a violation of the Constitution of equality for all people. And also one of the constitution of Taiwan is their freedom to be married. And since I'm not an attorney in Taiwan, because I can only talk about the constitution in Taiwan in a very basic level, but I know that in Taiwan there's two big constitutional law, which is the all people are equal and the freedom to marriage. By disallowing same-sex couple to be married, we argue that is a violation of the two constitution that is a major one in Taiwan.
Now, this means that Taiwan's parliament has to amend the law or pass new laws. Is that going to be an uphill fight, or do you think this court ruling just kind of throws the door open wide for that to happen?
Oh, I think it's going to pass, because Taiwan also recently disallowed eating dog. By eating dog is illegal. So the fact that Taiwan is also the first country to make it illegal to eating dog meat, and now to allow same-sex marriage, I think Taiwan tried to set an example how liberal our country is.
And Taiwan has been, frankly, more liberal on same-sex unions and relationships than other countries in Asia. Its gay pride parade is known as one of the biggest in the continent.
Yes. Yeah. In 2015, I don't know how many people show up. It was one of the biggest Asia gay parade. A lot of parents of gay children are very supportive of it, which is very against the Asian traditional family value of having a son to carry the name. So it was really nice to see not just to see how many people out there to support this cause. You know, the fact that I think that Taiwan's the first country that allows same-sex marriage, I think is a good stepping stone. It's a good point. It's a good opening door for other countries to follow, especially Taiwan are very close to China. At this point, the relationship are getting better. There's a lot of tourism. I think that it would hopefully, at least, you know, I would hope that it would also open a door in China.
Evie Jiang, a Taiwanese-American lawyer specializing in family law, she was speaking with VOA Asia's David Bird. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Philippine troops begin campaign to retake city from Islamist militants. North Korea unwilling to act on Seoul's conciliatory moves, experts say. DNA tests identify missing South Korean girl from ferry sinking. New Zealand launched rocket. It reaches space, but not orbit. Search for kidney cements personal Cambodian-American bond. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The credit rating agency Moody's Investors Service on Thursday downgraded Hong Kong after a day it cut its rating for China over its rising debt levels. Moody's said that would have a significant impact on Hong Kong. The territory's local currency and foreign currency issuer ratings were lowered from AA2 to AA1. China's rating was cut for the first time since 1989, from AA3 to A1 on Wednesday, reflecting what Moody's called its expectation that China's financial strength will erode somewhat over the coming years, with economy-wide debt continuing to rise as potential growth slows. Beijing called the move an exaggeration of the difficulties facing the world's second-largest economy. Scott Kennedy of the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies tells VOA's Victor Beatty the change is long overdue.
You would think credit rating agencies issue ratings that are leading indicators of where countries and companies are going. Moody's is giving us the right answer, but it's a lagging indicator. Other rating agencies have already recognized challenges in China's financial system, as have investors, as has China's government, as has the International Monetary Fund. So it's about time that Moody's caught up and did this. I don't think we should be overly alarmed. They just downgraded it slightly. It's not junk bond status, but it is a wake-up call given how infrequently Moody's moves its ratings lower on China.
What will be the outcome of this change? Will it make borrowing more difficult for China?
Probably not, because I think the market is already priced in some of the financial risks that China faces, and they agree that in the short term that the Chinese government probably has enough tools to avoid a major risk, but there's medium to long-term risks that Moody's pointed out. So it might lead some others to be a little bit more bearish on China modestly, but I think on its own, it's not going to have that big an effect.
The Chinese finance ministry criticized the decision. It said Moody overestimated difficulties facing its economy and underestimated Beijing's industrial reform and financial strength.
I think the Chinese government statement should go back and read Chinese government statements from last few months that are given to an internal audience, and they would see statements about China's financial system that are very similar to what Moody's said. So I understand the need to defend the Chinese reputation in the world of public opinion, but everyone in China, especially at the central bank, the Ministry of Finance, other parts of the bureaucracy and the leadership know that China has a lot of work ahead of it to solidify its financial system and make the economy more efficient.
Scott Kennedy said debt is the biggest challenge facing the Chinese economy. The New York Times said it stems from the global financial crisis in 2008 when China unleashed a wave of infrastructure spending. It said China's debt currently amounts to about 15% of total output. On the positive side, China owes little to other countries and sits on a $3 trillion foreign reserves. One analyst, Brad Setzer of the Council on Foreign Relations, said it could decide to sell state-owned banks, write off their bad loans, and then recapitalize them. Happening now in Asia, a U.S. Navy warship sailed within 22 kilometers of a Chinese-controlled reef in the South China Sea. China says the U.S. patrol undermined peace and stability in the South China Sea. A U.S. defense official says the USS Dewey conducted a routine freedom of navigation operation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for listening today. South Korea's young democracy was tested with the recent impeachment of former President Park Geun-hye, and now the rule of law is on display as the disgraced leader stands trial on criminal charges. The National Assembly resolution to impeach Park in December was based largely on allegations that she colluded with her longtime friend Choi Soon-sil to extort Korean conglomerates to donate over $69 million to two dubious foundations. Park is the first elected leader to be removed from office in South Korea since democracy was established in 1987. In a criminal trial where the defendant enjoys a presumption of innocence and the burden of proof is on the prosecution, Lee In-ho, professor of law at Chung-Ang University in Seoul, says this same strategy could work to Park's benefit. Professor Lee says prosecutors need to prove it is true and based on evidence without reasonable doubt, so President Park does not have any reason to prove herself innocent. She could face more than 10 years in prison if convicted, and unless the prosecution can prove that Park directly received bribes, it will be difficult to connect her to a crime based solely on corporate donations made to the foundations. Professor Lee says if it is proven to be a bribery crime, then it would mean a president cannot work on the establishment of foundations for the public interest, so it is questionable to me. Our thanks to Brian Patton and Yeomi Kim in Seoul for sending us this report. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, military helicopters on the southern island of Mindanao in the Philippines flew above Marawi City rooftops as armored tanks rolled through its neighborhoods amid sporadic gunfire and explosions. Philippine troops are moving against militants in the area. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Pakistan has begun a crackdown against social media activists who are critical of its powerful military. However, Aisha Tanzim in the capital, Islamabad, says a major opposition party says the ruling party is using the military as cover to suppress criticism.
Taha Siddiqui was relaxing in his living room with his son when he received a telephone call. On the other end of the line was a man claiming to be with the counter-terrorism department. He told Siddiqui to immediately report to his office. His concern was Siddiqui's work, particularly his social media activity.
He was a bit rude in his approach towards it. It wasn't a courteous call. It was actually a call where he was talking from a point of authority and sort of intimidating. The tone was intimidating.
Siddiqui was the only journalist approached by the government. Others, mostly political activists and opposition figures, had been called in for questioning solely based on their social media activity. One of them tweeted that he was told to submit his cell phone and laptop for inspection, while another tweet indicated that a doctor was picked up while on duty in a hospital. Pakistan's interior minister has made it clear that the government will continue to take action against certain social media activity, particularly comments demeaning the country's armed forces, judiciary, or blaspheming Islam.
I assure you, no one is putting any restrictions on social media. But a free-for-all social media is also unacceptable for a democracy.
Opposition leader Imran Khan says the effort is directed against his party. His party, PTI, has held protests around the country.
The hallmark of the civilized nation is freedom of expression. In all the free societies, you are free to express whatever you feel like and you are free to give your opinion. Unfortunately, the government in Pakistan, they're trying to curb the voice of civil society of Pakistan.
The current crackdown has revived memories of at least five bloggers who went missing for a few weeks earlier this year. Many in the country blame the intelligence agency ISI for picking them up because they criticized the military in their social media posts. A countrywide uproar led to their return, but they were afraid to speak up about what happened. Most of them and their families reportedly left the country soon after. At least one of them told the BBC he was tortured for pleasure by members of a government institution linked to the military. Siddiqui, on the other hand, was approached officially, so he filed a complaint in court. The judge ordered the government agency to stop harassing him and to explain its actions in court next week. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a computer beat China's top player of Go for a second time in a competition authorities limited the Chinese public's ability to see. Kujia lost despite playing what Google's AlphaGo indicated was the best game any opponent has played against it. Go is one of the last games machines have yet to master. VOA Asia Facebook has the latest stories. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an increasing number of museums and exhibition halls around the world use virtual reality technology to transport visitors to different spaces and different time. London's Somerset House recently opened a virtually recreated exhibition staged 178 years ago. VOA's George Pudich reports it shows some of the earliest photographs transporting users to the birth of the information age.
Virtual reality can transport us visually to any artificially created world, but for full tactile sensation, we will have to wait for a few more years. However, some of the objects can correspond to the virtual world, such as the floor, walls, and pieces of furniture. Donning VR goggles and headphones, visitors moving around this featureless room are virtually visiting a 19th century exhibit, showing what was at that time a cutting-edge technology.
I thought this could be an interesting place to revisit because it's the time and the event which gave birth to other image-based technologies. Everything that came after it was all spawned from this one exhibition in a way.
The original exhibition, staged in 1839 in Birmingham, presented some of the earliest photographic prints. Today, they are faded beyond recognition, but scientists were able to recreate them.
All we had was various bits of writing, certain letters, and a bill, like a kind of a program for the events with a list of everything that was in the exhibition.
Making certain gestures, visitors can virtually pick up and take a closer look at each of the photographs. In order not to collide, visitors see each other as white apparitions moving among the display cases. The artist also recreated the sound environment with the shouts of protesters against technological developments at that time, breaking of windows, and even the warmth coming from the fireplace.
I love this. I mean, it's making history real and relevant to today. And I particularly like the year that's been chosen, obviously the beginning of a photographic exhibition, but also if we think about how it influenced the art world on a wider level, we've got the birth of Impressionism.
Artists say virtual reality technology is opening up unlimited possibilities for enjoying long-lost or otherwise inaccessible art pieces. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
From virtual reality to imagination and fiction, it's time for Hollywood to roll out its big-budget films of the year. Monsters and superheroes are framed by spectacular special effects on IMAX screens, and the industry's big stars are flexing their muscles, figuratively and literally. Most of these movies promise chills and thrills for not a small fee at the box office, and they're usually not Oscar heavyweights, but still, some of the industry's monster flicks look very promising for their originality, good acting, and for reviving classic movie franchises. VOA's Penelope Palou looks at some of these so you can decide which ones you might want to look at.
Filmmaker Ridley Scott returns to his iconic franchise with Alien Covenant. With fiendishly intelligent, indestructible xenoforms preying on humans on a distant planet, Alien Covenant bursts out following the same formula as the original Alien film almost 40 years ago. The crew of a colony ship is lured to an unknown planet after they receive a human signal. The Earth-like planet looks like a haven at first, but soon it turns into hell. The crew is decimated by the horrific acid-dripping aliens. The IMAX 3D technology adds another dimension to the gruesomeness of their attack.
All of this is to start our new life.
Catherine Waterston, who plays Daniels, a terraform expert and captain of the ship, resembles Sigourney Weaver's Ripley, the heroine of the original films.
Cause I feel you.
Michael Fassbender adds a Shakespearean tone to his role as a pair of identical-looking artificial intelligence synthetics. One is good, the other evil. The film is a prequel to Scott's original Alien trilogy and the opening chapter to new Alien sci-fi horror installments. Though Scott sacrifices originality for form, Alien fans will love it and Hollywood will cash in.
The fate of the universe lies on your shoulders.
After the unexpected success of the original Guardians of the Galaxy, filmmaker James Gunn makes a bigger, flashier sequel using the same cast embarking on new adventures. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 mixes action with raunchy humor, relying on the successful chemistry among the cast of bankable actors such as Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Bradley Cooper, and Vin Diesel.
No!
The impressive visuals and 70s rock music aim to attract moviegoers of all ages, a formula that has proven successful to the movie industry. So far, the sequel has grossed over $630 million.
Be careful of mankind, Diana.
Wonder Woman is one of the most anticipated superhero summer blockbusters. Director Patty Jenkins supplies a woman's touch to create a dynamic female superhero, an Amazon princess who leaves her realm to go fight the war to end all wars. Wonder Woman is played by actress and model Gal Gadot. Chris Pine plays Colonel Steve Trevor, a male sidekick. If Wonder Woman is meant to show female chops, Gadot got it.
She is real.
Tom Cruise headlines the revamped Hollywood flick The Mummy, showing off some wicked stunts chasing the resurrected malevolent creature, first played by Boris Karloff in 1932. This is the first time the mummy is fleshed out by a woman. Sophia Boutella plays ancient Egyptian princess Ahmanet, who wakes up from the dead and unleashes her rage on humanity. These flicks and more show that there is no end for audiences' appetite for sci-fi thrillers and comic book heroes, quenching Hollywood's thirst for another robust summer box office.
She's got plans for you.
Penelope Palou, VOA News, Washington.
We say hello to all of our friends in the Philippines listening on DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman. Hi, thanks for listening. Write to us as well. We're on VOA Asia Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including David Bird and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.